Talking to a Podcast, episode 17 for Wednesday, January 5th, 2011. 2010, the year in review, anime style, part 2, Rebirth. Well, we are back with part 2 of our look back at the year 2010 anime style. If you're thinking to yourself, part 2, huh, what is he talking about? Go to your iTunes or go to otakunopodcast.com and download part 1 of this episode. You'll definitely want to listen to that before launching into this one. But before we get started, I do have a couple of news items to go over. First of all, if you're planning on attending Anime Los Angeles and you own an Android-based smartphone or tablet, you should definitely check out the free Condroid app for Anime LA. It contains a full copy of the Anime Los Angeles schedule, along with all the cosplay gatherings, and it's a handy resource for you to have along with you at Con. You can check off events that you're interested in attending, and the program will remind you when they occur. And, as I mentioned before, the app is completely free. Check out the post linked to on otakunopodcast.com for more information or to download the app. In our last episode, we talked about Tokyo's Bill 156 and the furor it caused in the blogosphere. The funny thing is, a similar ban has already gone into effect in Osaka, and this fact seems curiously overlooked by just about everyone. Recently, Osaka enacted a ban on harmful publications and has placed restrictions on their sale and distribution, essentially the adult corner of the store as we discussed in the last episode. In addition to restrictions similar to the Tokyo bill, the Osaka version specifically targets comics marketed to women, consideration of a ban on boys' love comics. The bill also does not make any distinctions between reality and fiction. And finally, its definition of harmful is very strict. If more than 10% of the pages of a publication, or more than 10 pages overall, deal with sex, the manga can be claimed as harmful. When you consider that many manga anthologies are hundreds and hundreds of pages thick, a 10-page cutoff point seems rather strict to me. Anyways, let's get on to the second and last part of our look back at 2010. We discuss some of the notable anime that were licensed or released in the year, and talk about some that really deserve to be licensed. In our opinion, the future of anime is far from doom and gloom as everyone's been predicting.
Anyway, let's go down the line here. We got some more stuff.
Notable releases this year.
And
I'm going to start with this one because it's probably the one that'll draw the most ire to me, and that's K-On! And I do not understand why this is such a polarizing topic in the blogosphere. People either really love it or they just absolutely hate it. And I think the people that hate it, theory is that the people that hate it, they don't understand the simple three words, slice of life.
Well, I can give an example of other anime that are like this. Azumanga Daioh.
Uh-huh.
Anyone remember Azumanga Daioh?
Yeah.
And American shows, Daria.
Yeah.
You know, slice of life.
Yeah. But,
and it's a slice of life that happens to happen in a high school.
Mm-hmm.
These are not middle schoolers or kindergartners or whatever. They're in high school, you know. So we're not talking about itty bitty Rory-kun stuff. And
I don't even think that there's a single panty shot in the series.
Right.
I mean, it's done. It's very tastefully done.
Yeah. And furthermore, and this is the thing I love about it. I have yet to see the series, but I love the whole concept of it now. Once I sat down and thought about it, girls are getting themselves guitars, drum sets, basses. And they want to be just like the K-On! Girls. They want to be like the, what's it,
Hokago Tea Time.
Hokago Tea Time.
Yeah. It is getting people into music. the thing that they did that really fostered this is they released, you know, normally you see an anime soundtrack with, you know, a couple songs from the series. They released versions of the songs, you know, minus one of them, minus guitar track, another minus the drum track. The idea, yeah. And they released sheet music, you know, guitar tabs and that sort of thing. The idea being, you know, play along. Pick up an instrument and play along, and people are doing it. I mean, just look on the YouTubes. I think Danny Chu, in one of his Culture to Japan programs, visited an actual Japanese high school that actually had a after-school light music club, you know?
Exactly. And the thing is that these clubs, these after-school clubs or after-school lessons, you know, getting into an American frame of reference, everyone knows that the arts are getting short shrift in schools. Yeah. You know, it's like maybe there's still a marching band, but that's it. You know, folks, Glee is a cute TV show, but there aren't many schools that can afford something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like it has to be out of school because the schools can't afford it. And, you know, it would be wonderful if Cartoon Network picked up on K-On! And maybe trimmed it a little bit here and there, but just, you know, push the heck out of it because it might inspire kids to go, hey, I want to do music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So anyways, you know, I was wondering for the longest time because K-On! Had drew such, you know, it was so popular in the blogosphere. I was just counting the days until it got licensed and Bandai did the smart thing and they snapped it up at Anime Expo. And I was like, My reaction was, it's about effing time.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, think back to when there was a war going on for Naruto.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, you were seeing people going totally hog wild for it, you know, 2-3 years before it got licensed. You know, and you go to a con now, and how many K-On! Cosplayers do you see? Lots.
I'm seeing a lot. I saw a really convincing Yui at PMX. I checked the Otaku no Podcast photo gallery for the pictures. I still need to go through my pictures, so keep checking there. More will come up. But yeah, it's awesome.
I hear you on that because I got some backlog of photoshopping that I need to do too. Yeah. In fact, some of it for my family. But anyway, moving on. Another show that took a little while to get licensed, and it's funny because it was online originally. Hetalia.
I know, and it's especially funny considering how incredibly popular it was. It is among the blogosphere, you know, the anime, the fandom.
Absolutely, and especially females, because there is the slightest hint of flirtation between some of these cute guys who represent countries. You know, it's basically you have it's kind of if you recall Bullwinkle and Rocky, you know, the TV series, there would be these other segments and, you know, you have the Wayback Machine and, you know, Sherman and what was the talking dog's name?
I don't remember.
I'm blanking on this, but there was this kind of weird trip through history where you had Sherman and and this dog that was the dog wasn't named Poindexter. Poindexter was Felix the cat. Anyway, you know, you had this you know, going through history and just seeing weird takes on historical events. And it's a similar spirit to Hitalia. And, you know, you have these countries and they're interacting with each other, and each of them are embodied by a character, and they some of them are on different sides of you have the Axis, you have the Allies. They kind of use World War II as a jump off point, but just to be totally honest with you, it's not a serious treating of, you know, certain, you know, it kind of glosses over some nasty stuff about events surrounding World War II, but the thing is, you don't care because it's so damn funny.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And like I said, there's a big female following because there's slight hints of maybe, you know, I don't even want to call it BL because it's, you know, you don't see anything. It's just
right.
Odd little flirtations.
Yeah.
And of course, this is something that launched 1,000 doujins.
Yeah.
You know, the series that launched 1,000 doujins. And it's available season by season through Funimation. It's been streamed on Funimation's site. And you know, it's very available, and this is the reason why at AX there was this Xbox huge gathering that wasn't even an official event, but I mean, there must have been 20,000 people, all, you know, 20,000 Hitalia cosplayers in the parking lot at the LA Convention Center.
That was epic.
It was epic. And, you know, they were blowing vuvuzelas. You know, there was a little bit of World Cup fever involved because you have all these countries, you know, and all these embodied countries, you know, the World Cup kind of played into that and vice versa. It was great. It was great. And, Hitalia, funny. You know, definitely if you're not hip to it, get hip. And there are ways of getting hip to it that don't cost you a dime. So do it. Okay. Another thing that I liked that apparently you haven't had much exposure to, Eden of the East. It's about basically people who are given not a huge amount of money, but a sizable sum with the idea that they're going to do something concrete to help Japan get out of its economic slump. You know, they're going to improve Japan somehow or another. And there are like a handful of people, and they get this kete that's got loaded up with a sizable amount of money, and you spend that money to fulfill a vision you have, and if the vision isn't good enough, you get killed. And so it's this game, and there's a shadowy billionaire who's running this game, and there are these people called Selassau, Again, you know, you have a little bit of a soccer slash football thing in there. The Seleção is the Brazilian national football team, soccer team, you know, the selection. And you know, each one of these people who are part of this game, you know, are players in the game. And you follow this one guy and the girl that he quite literally bumps into as he's trying to figure out why he's in a foreign land and why he doesn't have any clothes. You know, and this is the very beginning of it. And he has, you know, and why he has this mobile phone on him that's got, you know, tons and tons of credits on it. And I suppose I have to mention that in Japan, not only are phones what you talk into, what you surf the web on, etc., they're also your wallet.
Yes, they have those chips in them that are basically, it's like a mobile pay terminal.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's a little thing you need to know before checking this out. But Eden of the East, the whole series has come out on DVD.
And it's on Blu-ray as well, which I hear is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And there are three movies that were made after the series unspooled on television. As you probably are aware, oftentimes an animated series will go one season and then end. And that's by design. And this was one of those series. So you have the series and you have these movies. And that's the cycle of the whole thing. And it's right now, the series is out. The movies are going to be out. And enjoy it. Again, it's one of those, you know, this whole genre of psychological anime, you know, of mind hack anime. I love it.
I love it.
And Eden of the East, as far as I've seen through it, not a speck of moe.
Yeah.
Not a speck of moe. This is going to be not a selling point for some, but it's going to be a big selling point for others.
Right.
Okay, and now we come to two movies that are finally coming out in America. They're going to be in a very limited release. So, you know, when you hear about it coming to your town, jump on it. I don't care if you have to, you know, go across town to this one art cinema to see it. Make the effort, because
yes,
two are you one of those you gotta see type things.
It'll blow you away.
Summer Wars.
Oh.
Summer Wars. That, if I was running the zoo at the Oscars, I understand that it didn't make the cut for nominations, and it didn't make the cut for the Annies, which I no longer vote on.
That's terrible. That's sad.
Screw you, Asifa Hollywood. Screw you, Pallies. You know, it's like you had that big scandal about Kung Fu Panda. I mean, Kung Fu Panda was a nice feature. You know, it did not have the same impact, the same move the genre forward thing as WALL-E, you know, which was just, you know, tremendous. But, you know, it's like the folks at DreamWorks, they gave every single blessed person from directors all the way down to the janitors Asifa Hollywood memberships. And when the time came for the Annies, they said, "Psst. You like your job? You like your Asifa Hollywood membership?
Oh, man.
You like all those lovely screenings you get to go to for free? Well, the Annies are coming up. Ooh, we're nominated. And what happened was a big old honking block from DreamWorks voted en masse, and
they stuffed the ballot box.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. And the thing is that, of course, Disney Pixar is going to squeal, 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 squeal about this. And they can hold up their Oscar and say, what are you going to do about this? And what they did do was they told the student members of Asifa Hollywood and the fan members of Asifa Hollywood, you can't vote in the Annies anymore. Why? Because you're not in the industry. You have to prove that you're in the industry in order to vote for the Annies. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's the fans and the students who could conceivably keep the Annie Awards honest.
Yeah.
Because they're not employed by a studio.
And they've got their fingers on the pulse of, you know, what's going on.
Yes, yes. And they re-up their membership every year because they love it.
Yeah.
They love being a part of Asifa Hollywood. They love supporting the animation archive, you know, which preserves more and more of our animated patrimony year after year. They work day in, day out on digitizing stuff and preserving stuff, you know. But that's all beside the point. They basically said no more fan voters, no more student voters. And
ow.
Guess what? Guess what, Asifa? If a studio decides to stuff the ballot box again, you will have less, not more, of a check and balance.
Yeah.
against your precious Annie's going runaway.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back, we have these two movies, Summer Wars and Ava 2.0, You Can Not Advance.
Oh, yes. The Ava reboot has just been phenomenal, both in terms of quality and they really, it's like Ava with all the fat tripped out of it, you know?
Exactly.
It's lean,
exactly.
And mean.
And it's all action. It's all
killer. All action.
And
the graphic, and the animation is shiny.
Yeah. And the thing is that it's kind of sad to see both of these movies going out through Funimation. I'm going to be very evil and say that they simply don't have the resources that a major studio would. It's like Summer Wars went out in Asia through Warner Brothers Asia. So it's obvious that Warner Brothers had first crack at the title. What Warner Brothers should have done, and they are not very good at foresight when it comes to Warner Brothers animation. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to hear this in the industry and they're going, yeah, Ms. Geek, you know, you typically mouthing off about big companies, but it's like, they had an opportunity dropped in their lap. Incredibly beautiful, incredibly rich movie that not necessarily bound to being a Japanese movie. This is something that if it was sufficiently marketed and if you had a star-studded dub, you could get this in the movie theaters and you can get people's butts in seats to see it.
Yeah. I mean, look at what Disney did with the Studio Ghibli releases.
Yeah. I mean, they're crappy when it comes to doing DVD releases, but when they put it in the theaters and they actually get behind them,
yeah.
Look at what happened to Spirited Away.
Yeah, Spirited Away.
They lost their mojo after that, unfortunately. But the thing is that Summer Wars, if you had, an incredibly cool dub, with names people know, and you put it in theaters, even for like a week, and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think that you would have people just going nuts over it. You'd have the critics going nuts over it. You'd have people going into the theaters. You'd have wonderful word of mouth that would bring people in. And, same with with Ava. It's like they're going to have to have like a prologue in the beginning where they explain certain things to American audiences because of the fact that there's so much shorthand going on.
Yeah.
You're dealing, it was made for Japan and Evangelion was.
It's like an institution there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, Robin Williams has been a fervent supporter of the Ava franchise.
Really?
Yes. I mean, did you ever see a movie called One Hour Photo?
I have to see that.
Okay. It's Robin Williams doing a scary dramatic character, but there's a scene in there where he talks to this one kid who's looking at the toy aisle at this drugstore where he runs the photo booth, the 1 hour photo, and he's talking to him about Evangelion, and the toy that he's looking at is Ava 01.
Wow.
And he's explaining this, and it's obvious that this was sort of a semi improvisational scene. And he was just being an otaku right there. I mean,
is awesome.
If they would have gotten a star-studded dub for the Ava reboot movies with Robin Williams doing the voice of Gendo, and okay, I want you to forget what he did in Aladdin as the genie. Forget what he does as a comedic actor. He's done enough dramatic roles to where you've seen what he can do dramatically.
I know.
Yeah.
He could totally pull it off. He'd be an awesome Gendo Ikari.
Yeah. And just get a wonderful cast surrounding him. A John Lasseter kind of star-studded dub. Get that into theaters, and you would have a riot because it would just
absolutely.
Be. Well, it's just there is nothing animated quite like Evangelion. Even when they were dealing with a TV budget somehow or another, the sheer inventiveness of what they were doing.
They pulled it off.
And, you have the first round of movies, which maybe wasn't so good, but this round of movies is just brilliant.
Good stuff.
I have yet to see 2.0, but from what I saw in 1.0 and from the little bits and pieces I've seen, it's like, bring it on. I want to meet Mari. I've seen enough clips with her, and I mean, they even put out a Dolphy Dream of her.
Nice.
And she's awesome.
Nice.
I mean, and I want to know about her because she's the American girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So.
But Summer Wars. You know, you Funimation is doing what they can, and you know, at least they're releasing it. So you know, it's going to be good. Definitely get it out. Get it on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever when it comes out. I understand it will be coming out on Blu-ray, and I suspect it will look awesome.
Oh yeah, of course it will. Of course it will. But yeah, it could be a theatrical thing as well.
I agree.
I know that the theaters are hurting right now. I mean, I saw a movie recently. I saw it twice, once 2D, the other 3D. And in each time I went to my local theater, and it was almost like being in a screening room because there weren't many people there. But then again, well, it was a weekday, but it was a weekday during a school holiday.
Yeah.
Back when I was growing up, I don't know about when you were growing up, and you know, here I am talking about in my day. But, you know, when you had summer vacation and you had winter vacation, you had kids crawling, you know, the theaters crawling with kids.
I remember, yeah.
But now, not so much. Crickets, chirp, 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 chirp.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid for my local Cineplex. I'm afraid, you know, okay, I'm gonna uncloak about where I'm at. You know, it's like the man's plant 16 in Van Nuys is a beautiful theater. It's been there for over 10 years. It's an institution, and I don't know how they keep it afloat. It's so empty. I haven't been there in a long time on either a Friday night or a Saturday night. Maybe that's where they make up all their money. But still, you know, it's like, you know, I know people have a weird view of the neighborhood I live in, but it's not so bad. Yeah. And things have gotten a lot better in the past 5 years, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I don't know what the rest of the chain's business. It's like they're also the company that runs the world famous Chinese theater and the six other theaters that are right next to the Chinese that are called the Chinese Six. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I mean, that might be where they make up their money and why they're able to keep an underperforming place going. You know, and they have theaters in Glendale, which is a better neighborhood, and they have theaters in Thousand Oaks and in Westlake Village. You know, I'm sure that's where they make their money to keep the underperforming places afloat. But, you know, I don't know how long this can last. And the thing is that you know, even the places that perform well, yes, they're making money. They're making more money. But the reason why is because so many movies are going out as 3D events. And they charge a little extra for 3D. So they get a little extra bump at the box office. But as far as actual butts and seats go, that's been on the decline for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like the last time we had a depression here, you know, the movie theaters were absolutely crawling with people because that was the, you know, you had radio and you had motion pictures and that was entertainment.
Right.
You know, it's like now you've got all kinds of choices. And the thing is that 3D is good, but not every story can be told in 3D.
Yeah.
And not every story benefits from 3D.
Yeah, and it takes the right kind of director. You know, somebody who uses it as a tool, not a gimmick.
Right, right. And it usually works best when you're dealing with CGI.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with CGI.
Because it's all 3D anyway.
Right. You know, you have X, Y, and Z axis. Mm-hmm. You have everything you need to create a 3D data file.
That's why video games are probably the easiest to transition into 3D.
Yes, yes. But it's, you know, outside of gimmickry, you know, movie theaters are on the decline. Mm. And I think it has to do with similar issues to the physical media versus streaming media.
Yeah.
And downloadable media. Mm-hmm. Thing that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the landscape of entertainment is changing.
Yeah, that it is.
And I think that, you know, we may wind up in a situation where most everything is delivered online and you have a pipe into your home and it comes there and it's like they finally work out kinks with micropayments and you know you deal with it that way. And I think that what you're going to wind up with is less epic material being created because this kind of media is simply not sustainable. You know, it's like you can't do an Avatar level movie for the internet. It's just not going to translate. And you're not going to have these big media companies that are going to be shelling out the money to future people. Maybe they'll shell out the money for a James Cameron, but you're not going to find people. You're not going to find that same kind of support for the internet, and furthermore, people's attention spans are going to be even more fragmented and used to getting their entertainment in bite-sized chunks. So you may wind up in the future when you go to look for one of these classic movies that you remember, it might be serialized to you. You might get 10-minute chunks that are that you pay 10 cents a piece for. Eventually, you wind up seeing the whole movie, but you see it in chunks. I mean, how many times do you watch a movie on DVD, and how many times do you not hit pause, you know, throughout the entire thing? How many times do you watch a movie and you're hitting pause so that you can take a comfort stop, or you can get something out of the fridge or something like that.
Yeah.
Our attention spans are changing. And that's another element to all this. You know, pardon the expression, but it's a lot like the blind men looking at an elephant.
I agree.
You know, and they hold on to little pieces here, little pieces there, and you think, oh, that's like a rope, that's like a snake, that's like a pillar. When in reality, you've got an elephant in front of you. That's like a leaf, like a big old honking leaf. But right. What you're looking at is the elephant,
right.
And they can't see the whole picture. But I think one of the neat things about our convo today, you know, yeah, is that we're isolating some of these pieces of the elephant and we're putting them together.
Yeah, definitely a very thought-provoking conversation today.
Yeah, let's talk further about anime of note that got licensed.
There's only one more that notable and some might say notorious title, and that is Strike Witches. And it's something that's not everybody's cup of tea. Michelle, in particular, I think you would hate it because it's basically Moe and Pansu City. But it's certainly popular among the male otaku crowd and has garnered a lot of electrons.
These are the characters with, like, airplane fuselages as boots?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, Funimation picked up the license, and it's notable in the advertising campaign that they are doing, which I think is funny as hell. Basically, the Strike Witches universe is kind of an alternate universe, sort of World War II style universe.
Like Italia.
Yeah, so what Funimation did is they made their commercials in the style of newsreels, you know, from World War II, you know, complete with the aged film, the black and white aged film look, and the announcers that talk like this, you know, and all that. It's just funny as hell. And the whole premise of the ads is the war on pants. And you have to go on YouTube and see some of the it's pretty good. So that's it for that. Now I wanted to talk a little bit about anime series that came out in Japan that I think deserve a right and proper licensing here.
Oh yeah, one more thing. Actually, it belongs in the licensed bin because it's licensed through Crunchyroll. Does that work for this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. This is one thing that I think is going to probably not translate to like a release on DVD because of concerns about content. But that's panty and stocking with garter belt.
Yes.
Which is hilarious.
Yes.
This
total moe satire.
This is Gainax going back to the same well that they went to for Furikuri and Magical Shopping Arcade Abenobashi. You know, this is Gainax being funny. This is, you know, our podcast is named after another example of Gainax being funny, and that's Otaku no Video. And It's like funny as hell. It satirizes a lot of what I consider wrong in the current crop of anime. And I love it. And it's based on an American show that I absolutely love, which is Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
Represent Powerpuff Girls. Oh my God, awesomeness. And it's like Cartoon Network funded a Japanese series called Dimesh the Powerpuff Girls Zetto. And I'm sorry, it just fell flat.
Ugh.
This is what should have been done. And the thing is that it's going to, you know, it's going to totally run afoul of this new Tokyo regulation, Bill 156. I don't think it's going to last more than this current season. And it's very sad because this is funny as hell.
Yeah.
It's very, very much an adult show.
Yeah.
And yes, these are supposedly little kids, but they don't act like little kids.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that what you're looking at is just something very silly and very cartoony. And I can imagine my friend John Chris Flusi actually loving this show. And he absolutely hates most anime because it's just so cartoony. It's so wild. It's so outrageous. I mean, it couldn't, another show in with which, you couldn't have seen Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt without is Ren and Stimpy. You know, it's a different kind of humor, but the outrageousness, man, the outrageousness is there. And it's just, you know, it's in danger. It's the one show I can think of that is just absolutely going to be an endangered species with this new law.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah, too bad. It's a shame, really.
I don't know if we're going to see this on DVD.
Yeah.
I think that probably streaming is all we're going to get with this.
Yeah.
Too bad.
It is too bad.
Okay.
So what caught my eye this year? You know, everybody says, oh, anime is dead. There's all they're coming out with is crap. But you know what? Yes, there was a lot of crap this season, but there were some awesome series as well. Start with one of my favorites, Angel Beats. It's written by a guy named Jun Maeda from a company called Key, who's famous for visual novels. They did the visual novel and later the anime adaptation of it that is probably one of my all-time favorite series, canon. But for Angel Beats, this is a completely original title. It's not based on a visual novel. It's a very, very intriguing story. The basic premise is people who felt that they've died before their time are pissed off at God for, you know, for their situation, and so they are waging war against him in heaven. Very fascinating premise, and the animation is just gorgeous. The first few episodes were a bit rough, but they went back later and corrected those for the DVD release, which is fairly common. Some people have said that Jun Maeda is not a particularly good writer. I kind of tend to disagree. I think given enough time, he can write in terms of episodes, he can write a very good story. Take, for example, Canon. Canon was actually released as an anime twice. The first version came out in 2002, was animated by Toei. I think that's how you pronounce it. And it was only given a 13-episode run. And it was good, but in 2006, due to popular fan pressure, it was reanimated by Kyoto Animation, and this time they gave it a 26-episode run, and it was great. I mean, you really with stories like this, both Canon and Angel Beats, very character-driven, you need time to develop the characters, to get to know them. And, you know, looking at Angel Beats, you know, it's 13 episodes. There are hints of that, but, you know, I still think that it needs to be seen. So it deserves a release, but really what I think it deserves is the canon treatment, basically having it redone as a longer series. Maybe with the release, maybe there'll be enough fan pressure to do that.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah. High School of the Dead is another series that I absolutely loved. This is, you know, the zombie apocalypse has arrived, and how does it affect, you know, this group of Japanese high school student survivors? And the director, the writers and the directors, they have action, the pacing down perfectly. It is the perfect mix of action, you know, with the little suspenseful breaks in between. It's just probably one of the best paced shows that I've seen in a long time. And yes, there are a lot of panty shots, but, you know, people have complained about the busty students, but, you know, I would argue that American survival horror movies have had their share of, you know, your busty college co-eds, so we're not really one to complain. Anyways,
yeah,
fabulous pacing, just, and the animation is spot on, gorgeous. And I think, you know, there is a big crossover between anime fans and
horror fans.
I mean, look at Resident Evil, look at Hellsing. I think this, if given a proper release, this thing will be snapped up.
Oh yeah.
Arakawa Under the Bridge. This is a very weird, unusual title. It's got a very sort of absurdist sense of humor to it. Basically, the story goes that this sort of, you know, straight-laced sort of MBA type is walking on this bridge one day, and accidentally falls into the water and gets saved by one of the people living underneath the bridge. And his whole ethic is basically you have to repay debts. So he kind of sticks around with and falls in with these really weird cast of characters. And ultimately, he begins to change his ways. You know, it's the whole, you know, see how the other side lives and, you know, kind of, you know, get, you know, your well, sympathy sort of thing.
There's elements to this, like, you know, of course you have a Christmas Carol, you know, it's like we're coming out of the Christmas season.
Yeah.
And you have that kind of transformation. And you also have, this is reflective of a transformation in Japanese society. It used to be that you didn't hear about homeless people in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was one of those little secrets that they were able to keep under the rug.
Right.
But, you know, as the economy in the world, you know, is, you know, gets, you know, further and further foobarred,
right,
and Japan has been undergoing this process for longer than anyone else, just about, you're seeing homelessness in Japan. And,
yeah,
you know, you had the beginnings of awareness of this in anime, and we were talking about Satsui Shikan, Tokyo Godfathers.
That's right, yeah.
You know, that he was way ahead of his time as far as his social awareness. And this sounds like a very socially aware series. And I take it there's no moe in this one?
Nope. Not a whit. And like I said, it's got a really absurdist sense of humor. And it's probably something that needs to be translated. You know, there's probably a lot of cultural references that'll, you know, make most people go, huh? And so I think, you know, like kind of like what they did with Excel Saga, how they sort of, I don't know if that's the right way to do it. They had those like kind of VH1 pop-up video style thing.
Pop-up Menchi notes, yeah.
But if given the proper cultural translations, I think this would be a very fun series. It's definitely one that needs to be watched more than once, you know, to appreciate it.
And the thing is that the people who normally consume this kind of media, you know, they're getting more and more hip to the cultural aspects.
Yeah.
And I got to give Danny Chu some credit.
This is
true. He's been really good about introducing otaku all over the world to some of the neat things about Japanese culture. And the thing is even before I was into anime and was aware of there being a difference between stuff that's coming out of Japan and stuff that's coming out of America, even before that, I was really interested in Japan as a culture. I had a second grade teacher who showed us these slides of her trips to Asia. She'd go every year during summer. She'd go to Asia. And one of the places that really interested me was Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even before I was into the into the pop culture, and the pop culture started filtering over here, I was interested in their traditional culture because it was just so awesome and so interesting, and so and it had a different flavor and a different color palette to it than what I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I was used to growing up, you know, a Jewish kid in the San Fernando Valley. I mean, at least, well, you know, you had your mom from Korea. And, you know, but, you know, you had an American dad and you were raised pretty much in an Americanized sort of existence. How much awareness of Asian culture did you have as a kid?
A fair amount. We had, you know, all of our relatives, of course, and mom had some Japanese friends and stuff. So a fair amount, yeah.
Yeah, and Korean culture is awesome too.
Oh yeah,
I'm just I'm much more of a Padawan learner when it comes to the delights of Korean culture.
Yeah, we've got to take you down to the Korean market one of these days.
Yeah. And I'll bring Mitzi Chun, my Korean American, amongst amongst my Furious Five of dolls.
There you go.
It's like as I explained a couple of episodes ago, they all have backstories, and she looked very Korean to me, and my rock and roller Z also looked Korean because it was the same sculpt. It was you know, a sculpt done by a Korean artist who calls himself Rain Man. Yeah, they had the look to their faces, and so Z is half Korean American, and Mitzi is full Korean American, and I need to get some more information on the culture, so at least where Mitzi is concerned, I can you know, kind of add little bits and pieces when I finally write this up as either a novel or as scripts for a manga.
Cool. All right. Kaicho wo Maid-sama. It's just a fun story. Very sweet. The male lead at first, I mean, if I wanted to throw stuff at the guy, but eventually, you know, you get to know his character, and he starts to show an interesting side to him. It's complex characters like that that I absolutely go for. And the animation is very pretty. I mean, there's a lot of that, you know, kind of sparkly thing, but I still like it. Just a fun little story. Squid Girl, which I think I talked about, another fun story. It's another one of your fish out of water, pun intended, stories, where basically a squid creature comes up from the deep because they're pissed off at the way we've been mistreating the environment, and comes to land in the form of a chibi squid girl, and the show goes about her misadventures in trying to enslave the populace, which generally does not work.
Ponyo, fishy in the sea, right?
It's funny as all get out. I was watching this.
So Ponyo done for laughs, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, actually, it's more like Sergeant Frog, kind of in spirit. It's just fun. Watching this during PMX, and you probably heard me cackling madly with my headphones on. It's just a fun series, very pretty, animation-wise. Amagami SS. This is based on a visual novel, and it's interesting in that it's a 24-episode show, but it's kind of, you know, like your typical dating sim, it's composed of six story arcs. So you have this little grouping of four episodes, and then, you know, and then it's like, you know, the story kind of completely resets. And this drives some people absolutely mad, but if you can stick with it, the characters, the writing is really superb. Basically, you know, dealing with human interaction and love and how we deal with it. The animation is, you know, some would say plain. I don't think that's the right word. Understated, I guess, would be more accurate. Colorful, but not super screaming. Bright colors, nice character design, and kind of bucking the trend, they decided not to play up the moe elements. The character designs are very kind of, you know, non-moe style. It's kind of refreshing, actually.
Are we talking about maybe more mature characters?
Yes. Kimi ni Todoke, which I think I've talked about before as well. All right, technically this title started in 2009, but it ended this year, so I think it still qualifies. And besides, they've announced a second season, which will start next month in January. It's the story of Sawako, a sort of shy, socially awkward girl who everyone fears because they misperceive her as being creepy, and the fact that her name is almost the same as Sadako, the villain from the Ring movies, doesn't help. But basically, this loner who, you know, one day the hot guy in the school starts talking to, and they slowly grow closer together, and you know, she starts to get this circle of friends around her. It's a story that, you know, speaks to all of us geeks. You know, we feel at times, you know, we're socially awkward, we're wallflowers, that sort of thing. A very sweet, poignant at times story. Like I said, the second season is starting in January, but you know, I really think this series deserves a proper release here. I think it would be very, very popular. Cool. Bakuman, yes. Who would think that a story about mangaka drawing manga would be fun and exciting? But it is.
Comic Party.
Yeah, definitely not the show for you if you're an action junkie, because there's almost no action. It's a lot of character and plot development, but that kind of thing, character and plot development, I absolutely go gaga over. So Bakuman, license it, please. And finally, Ore no Emoto. The full title is super long and I can't pronounce it, but it's basically your kind of, you know, normal guy discovers that somebody close to him, in this case his younger sister, is a closet otaku, and hilarity ensues. People are violently divided on this series, and most of the people who hate it do not like sister character, the little sister character. But what I think they do not realize is that she's a tsundere. I mean, you know, she does eventually, you know, you get to see her softer side, you know, so they're kind of not, you know, understanding that concept. Star Driver, a Bones series, very, you know, Bones is the studio that's done some fantastic mech titles. Razaphon.
Bones is great.
Yeah, yeah. Razaphon, Eureka 7, and Hero Man. It's your typical strange, you know, strange boy discovers secret mech and is the only hope for salvation type thing, but it is very well done and is shiny. And finally, The World God Only Knows. I would call it the anti-harem. The basic premise is there's this guy he's like your very typical introverted otaku. In this case, he's really into dating sim games. You know, he absolutely immerses himself in the 2D world. But one day is approached by this person called the Capturing God. Approaches him and basically says the situation is that these sort of demons are taking up residence in girls' hearts, and basically his job is to find the girls and fall in love with them, which scares out the evil souls that are hiding in their hearts. So that's why I call it the anti-harem, because the girls aren't coming to him. He has to go to them, and he's not exactly Mr. Bishy pretty boy. So that leads to some really interesting and hilarious situations.
You know what this premise reminds me of?
What's that?
Do you remember a short live series? I think that do you remember? It was called Reaper.
I do not remember that.
Yeah, I think that Kevin Smith had something to do with it, and it was about a kid who gets approached by the devil, and you know, becomes a reaper, basically sort of like a bounty hunter for the devil. And you know, to bring these miscreants who escape hell back to hell.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting that there's sort of a similar premise involved. Although I don't really think that American shows get on TV very much in Japan, do they?
Not really.
Because, you know, the humor is so different.
Right.
You know, it's such a different brand of humor between Japanese humor and American humor. And you're talking about something that that Kevin Smith had something to do with. So there's a lot of it's dialogue heavy,
right?
And that would be the least likely to translate.
Mm. Anyways, gorgeous animation. Not necessarily the most detailed character designs, but that is more than made up for by just the absolute fluidity of motion and the color palette. And finally, we really need to see some more of the Noitamina shows brought over. Noitamina is animation spelled backwards, and it's a programming block. I forget which Japanese network puts it on, but it is famous for having some just amazing titles. Eden of the East, that is one of the Noitamina titles. In particular, the ones out of this year that really caught my eye, House of Five Leaves. It's a gorgeous sort of samurai period piece, and the artwork is very unique. It's done by a studio called Manglobe, who also did another very stylish anime called Ergo Proxy.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. What else? Tokyo Magnitude 8.0, fantastic sort of disaster anime. Basically, what happens if the big one hits, the big earthquake, and it deals with you know, one possible scenario in a great amount of detail, and there's a lot of great character interaction as well. And let's see, other shows, Shiki and Tatami Galaxy. There's just a lot of great Noitamina titles that I think really should be brought over. And
Noitamina, would you say that's perhaps a Japanese equivalent of Adult Swim?
Sort of, not exactly, but kind of, yeah.
More of a cerebral Adult Swim.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. That sounds like they'd be right up my alley anyway.
Oh yeah. You'd definitely be into that. I mean, Eden of the East. You know, that's
yeah, one of the... yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Michelle, you had one last thing you wanted to talk about.
Yes, Tron Legacy.
Yes.
I know that you haven't seen it yet, so
no spoilers.
I will try not to spoil it, but it basically takes the original Tron as point zero, and it just moves it forward. And, you know, it's funny. All through the 3 year period that they were working on this, and the thing is that most of that 3 year period was post production. Tron Legacy was shot in a 30-day period, which is just absolutely.
Wow.
It used to be that would be a standard shooting schedule for a big feature, but you know, it doesn't seem to be that way in modern times. But the thing was that it was 30 days shooting, but all the work that needed to be done to it afterwards took all that time.
Wow.
And this is why, you know, they had stuff, and the thing is, before they even shot the actual movie, they shot some tests, and instead of shooting those tests for the studio, because the studio knew they could pull it off, they shot those tests with the singular reason of sneaking them at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh.
Remember the teaser trailer that had Tron spelt TR2N?
Don't recall.
Okay, it came out about 3 years ago. That was the teaser trailer I'm talking about.
Mm.
And they showed it at the Disney panel at San Diego Comic-Con. And they basically had an uproar in that Monster Hall H. This is the huge hall they have they have the biggest events in.
Wow.
And they had such an uproar that they had to stop the show and replay the trailer because nobody would let them go without replaying that trailer.
Wow.
And then a little bit later, it showed up on the internet, and the buzz got even more intense.
Wow.
And it was like, you know, Disney wanted to know whether there would be any demand for a Tron sequel. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that Tron is one of those movies that are just absolutely epoch making for geeks like us.
Oh yeah, it's one of the sort of cornerstones of geekdom.
Yeah, yeah, it ranks right up there with Star Trek and Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. You know, it's like came out. It was in theaters for like 2 weeks, and then it disappeared, and it was kind of ahead of its time. But when it came out on video, and remember, I was talking about sell-through video when people started. You know, when this came out in like a clamshell box,
yep.
And the geeks started getting a hold of this, and there was whispering about this movie that came and went, but it was just so cool. It got a fandom. I mean, you know, one of the internet memes that have stuck with us is this one rather portly guy who poured himself into a Tron suit.
Tron guy.
And it was a crying shame that he didn't get a cameo somewhere in the movie. It's sort of like you know, Star Wars kid should have been given a little cameo in one of the prequels, you know. But it's like, you know, it made an epoch, and it's also one of the first times that the whole notion of cyberspace was explored.
Yeah.
And this was before cyberpunk got into the, you know, front and center into the imaginations of the populace. I mean, it's like, I think it's roughly contemporaneous with Neuromancer.
Actually, Tron was 82, Neuromancer was 84. So it did predate cyberspace, William Gibson's space.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this was something very new. And it's like, this movie, they could have just made this a video game movie and made this to create a video game around. And actually, the first sequel to Tron actually was a video game called Tron 2.0 that was also alternately titled Tron the Killer App.
Mm.
But a lot of the plot from Tron Legacy, you find it in a much more embryonic form in the video game.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is definitely not just a reiteration of a video game. They actually dug deep and did some definite character development on Kevin Flynn.
Mm.
He is not just this cocky guy who knows how to program and, you know, who's like, you know, this, you know, wunderkind, you know, sort of a cross between, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, you know, all wrapped up in this video game wizard, you know, who had his video game stolen from him. You know, he's matured. He's mellowed. He's gotten a new perspective on things. And he's trapped inside the cyber creation that he, by and large, coded. And, you know, he had a wife and he had a son. You know, this happened after the movie, the first movie. And, the son, you know, the wife, you know, he was made a widower. It's not made clear why. And he has a son and they're real close. But, you know, lately he's been spending a lot of time at the office. And it's not made clear why he can't talk about it. And he tells a weird story to his son, you know, that recounts certain aspects of the original story. And it's, you know, all backstory from his video games. But what happens is he tells the story and you get to see a lot of Tron memorabilia and other memorabilia. And one thing that's amusing about Tron Legacy to us Mac geeks is that there are elements of, like, you know, Mac-related Easter eggs. I mean, after all, Steve Jobs is the primary shareholder in Disney, so you got to kind of kiss up to the boss. You know, the kid has a Mac classic in his bedroom.
Huh.
You know, so it's, you know, that's the most blatant thing. There's a lot of little subtle things. It's kind of Wally had a lot of subtle Mac Easter eggs.
Oh yeah,
there are some subtle Mac Easter eggs in this movie.
Sweet.
And basically, you know, the father and son have their moment. You know, Flynn, the father, roars off on his motorcycle. The kid never sees him again, and the kid grows up, you know, he feels totally betrayed by his dad, and he thinks his father skipped off somewhere, you know, to like Costa Rica or something, or he's dead, or he, you know, he ate the brown acid or something like that, or whatever. But it's like all of a sudden he starts, you know, his father's partner who worked with him on who was the model for the character Tron in the original movie and who coded Tron, he approaches him with a very weird thing. He got a page from a phone number that was disconnected 20 years ago.
Hmm.
And so it begins.
Wow.
And so you have father-son story about a father that becomes distant from his son. And he has to, they have to come back together to solve a problem. And that's kind of one of those classic anime tropes. And there's another quintessential anime trope in there about a good person having to face their dark half.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this awesome female warrior character who I love. And I can't say much about her origin. I can't say much about what makes her tick. but she's special. And in some respects, she's very similar to Rey in that the real nature of who she is kind of unfolds, and she becomes more and more dimensional as time goes on. It's sort of something that, as far as Rey goes, it seems like she's being developed as a character more in these new movies than she ever was in any of the other media that Neon Genesis Evangelion had come out in. And Quora, they're cutting right to that character development blossoming thing, and she is going to be key. There will be sequels. They're already working on it.
Mm.
She will be key in the next movies.
Nice.
And she's an awesome character, And the music. I wasn't impressed with the music when I heard it out of context of the movie. I kind of find that the Daft Punk, if you listen to their stuff and it's not in the context of dancing or it's not in the context of this movie or whatever, it gets pretty tedious after a while. It kind of falls into the same place for me as a lot of other techno music, in that you want to hear like a guitar solo. You want to hear like, you don't want to just hear a groove. You want to hear the groove go somewhere.
Right.
But in the context of the movie, the music works. I mean, it's not as stirring and, heroic as the music that Wendy Carlos did for the original Tron. But the thing is that if they did something that was the electronic equivalent of of John Williams, which is sort of kind of what Wendy Carlos did. It was epic music.
Right.
I wouldn't say that she stole anything from John Williams. It was going in a different direction. And in fact, in a lot of respects, it was a lot more classical what she was doing, but with electronic instruments. But what the Daft Punk people did, the two guys from France, is they created music that was just appropriate for what you're seeing on screen.
Uh-huh.
And there are places where you don't hear actual Daft Punk at their computers and their synthesizers. You hear somebody who's taken ideas that Daft Punk did and orchestrated it for an orchestra, actual, big movie orchestra. And
nice.
It's just the right flavoring. It's just the right seasoning. They did wonderfully, and visually, it's a feast.
Awesome.
It's visually a feast in 2D, and it's, there's a little more seasoning there in 3D. I thought that I was gonna have some problems with my balance when it came to some of the 3D sequences, but oddly enough, I did okay.
Really?
Yeah, because I sometimes have balance issues, and there's some computer games that triggered that for me, and there's the occasional scene in a 3D movie that will trigger that, but. It was not a problem with Tron Legacy, thankfully.
Excellent.
But yeah, it's a visual feast. Yeah, there's some plot holes, but then again, how many awesome kick your ass anime have you seen where the plot has had a hole here or there?
This is true.
in some respects, it's a bookend to Summer Wars. You know, this is not a cyber world that's open to the cloud like Summer Wars was, where, you know, you have a connection to the greater internet. The cyber world in Tron Legacy is still a closed system. It does not have tendrils into cyberspace. I suspect that's something that's, well, it was a world that was created in the late 80s, back when
the internet didn't exist then.
Well, in the popular
vernacular.
Yeah, this was before the September that never ended.
Right.
Yeah, you know, when the populace, the great unwashed, was led onto the internet. So it's not a net connected society as yet. I suspect that the direction we're going to go is going to go towards connecting this new world up with the greater cloud and issues that take place.
Fascinating.
And also, you know, there's certain unpredictable things that happened with this closed world, even, that were, quote unquote, nothing short of miraculous. And I am not going to, spoil them. Again, you gotta see this. You gotta see this. And, it's great.
Excellent.
Anyway, it's 11:56 now, and we're sneaking up on that.
Yes, we are. And, you know, 2010 was, there was a lot of sadness there. We had lost a lot of important people. But, you know, there was good things as well. Like I said, there's some awesome series that came out. And, you know, I'm looking forward to more of the same next year. Well, none of the death stuff. I mean, the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we deserve a break from the death
stuff. That's here. For sure.
Please. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, a good health and good fortune in the year of the rabbit. I mean, the year of the rabbit is supposed to be a lucky year.
Well, we could use some luck right about now.
Yes, we could. It's also my year. Yay! I was born during the water rabbit year, and if you want to look it up, you'll find out how old Grandma Ms. Geek is. But this is my year, and tomorrow I'm going to be going down to Little Tokyo, and I'm going to enjoy the fun and the whole first everything kind of thing that
awesome.
The Japanese love to do with the new year.
Awesome.
And another thing for those people who are going to be going to Anime Los Angeles.
Yes, we will be giving workshops again. Woo!
Yes, absolutely. The theme, they always do a theme on Sundays to try to keep people around, and the theme is going to be New Year's Festival. So
that's going to be awesome.
You know, if you can get some traditional garb and wear it, you know, that'll be cool, and I'm sure there's going to be other elements in there, you know. And unfortunately, one of the weaknesses of Anime Los Angeles is the fact that they do it during the period of time which is traditionally family time in Japan.
Right.
And this is the reason why they've never had a Japanese guest of honor.
Right. Back to Anime LA. Yes, we will be doing our usual song and dance once again. We have our same two workshops. Convention Photography 101. If you've ever had that experience where you go to a convention, take a bunch of pictures, and you come home, and all you have is a bag of hurt. Come to Convention Photography 101, and that is on Friday at 3 o'clock in LP3, I believe. Yeah, LP3, which is Imperial A. And on Saturday at 4 o'clock, we'll be doing our podcasting workshop. So if you've ever wondered how this three-ring circus operates, well, come and we'll show you. And that's at 4 o'clock on Saturday at – we're also in LP3. Imperial A. So, yes, this is going to be awesome. All right. Well, this has been an awesome conversation, I think. We'll right. See you later.
All right.
All right. Good you night. Too. And Happy New Year. That's it for this episode of Otaku No Podcast. Hope you enjoyed our look back at 2010. And I'm sure you'll agree with me that 2011 looks bright. Remember, if you've got something to say, well, tell us. You can send us email to feedback@otakunopodcast.com. You can call our Skype voicemail line. You can send us a tweet or post on our Facebook page. There's many ways of contacting us. Go to the otakunopodcast.com website and click the Contact Us link for more details. Also, remember that all of the links, the products, the stories, and so forth we talked about in this episode are in the show notes at otakunopodcast.com. And finally, one last reminder that Anime Los Angeles is this coming weekend, Friday through Sunday, January 7th through 9th, at the LAX Marriott. For more details, see the post on otakunopodcast.com. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we will see you next time.